Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison for Friday, October the 19th. Lee Kelly subbing for Matt today. Mr. Dennison will be back with you on Monday. Today's guest lineup presented by Honey Baked Ham. Headlines and news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. Segment 2 will find Jared Morris of Assembly Call, presented by Coffee Crossing. Segment 3, Kyle Nedrip of the Indianapolis Star. The Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. If you mention that at Honey Baked Ham, you'll get $1 off your box lunch. Take advantage of that today and every day. Hoosier Headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news, presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. Well, Indiana University senior forward Jawan Morgan, among 20 players on the Karl Malone Power Forward of the Year Award watch list. That was announced yesterday, I believe, and the awards and honors and mentions just keep rolling in. The NBA plans to offer a professional path to the G League with select $125,000 a year salaries being included. CBS Sports lists the top 100 college players for the 2018-19 season. Romeo Langford shows up at number 15, Jawan Morgan at number 31. And sectional football tonight around the state of Indiana, volleyball regionals tomorrow, cross-country semi-states tomorrow as the Indiana fall sports begins to wrap up. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill with fresh, made-to-order food, a great selection of craft brews, and the best sports atmosphere around. Hoopsters, where fun begins. Well, let's take a look at some of those stories today. Indiana University senior forward Jawan Morgan, as we said, is among 20 players on the Karl Malone Power Forward of the Year watch. That was announced by a national committee comprised of top college basketball personnel, and they determined the watch list of those 20. Morgan, a 6'8 forward from Waynesville, Missouri, in his fourth year with the Hoosiers, earned all Big Ten and all district honors as a junior. He improved his overall rebounds. He needs 170 points to become the 52nd player in IU history to reach the 1,000-point mark in their career. He was named preseason All-Big Ten. Last year's winner of Power Forward of the Year Award was DeAndre Ayton of Arizona. The NBA just made a big change to its G League, and that could affect some of the one-and-dones in college basketball. According to ESPN, the G League is getting a salary boost to $125,000 for elite prospects that are at least 18 years of age but not yet eligible for the NBA. That's a big bump in salary from the original $35,000 base salary for the five-month season, and there are other bonuses that could come into play, such as NBA call-ups, two-way deals, and so on. Still, most of those won't be available to high school prospects. It will target recent or would-be high school graduates who otherwise would have likely spent just one season playing college basketball, enticing them not to court development programs. It's geared towards facilitating and accelerating their transition to the pro game. On Thursday, Gary Parrish published the CBS Sports annual Top 101 list of the best players in college basketball. Romeo Langford shows up at number 15, Player of the Year. And also on that list, Wisconsin's 50-year forward Ethan Happ at number 7. IU is one of 8 Big Ten teams to land two players in the top 50. Romeo Langford, here's what it had to say about his game. As it says, everything about Langford's game, from smooth handling to his slick stroke, suggest he is going to be the next big thing in homegrown talent for IU. And he should formulate one hell of a 1-2 punch in Hoosier Town. Juwan Morgan came in at number 31 on that top 101 list. And about Morgan, it says he is the leading returning scorer and rebounder for an Indiana team that has realistic aspirations of returning to the big dance in year two of the Archie Miller era. The 6'8 forward put up 16.5 points, 7.4 rebounds, and 1.5 assists per game in a breakout campaign last season. High school fall sports winding down. Football intersectional play tonight, which will lead to the state finals at Lucas Oil Stadium on Thanksgiving weekend. Locally tonight, Columbus East is at New Albany. That is the featured game here on the Big X. Switzerland County's at Providence, Charlestown at Salem, Silver Creek at Scottsburg, Mitchell at Clarksville, and Eastern Green at Rock Creek. And those are some of the games that are going on. We also have volleyball going on tomorrow. And in the regionals tomorrow, Providence in 4A, the number 2 ranked team, 31-2 on the year. They will meet Center Grove. Other teams locally, Silver Creek will meet Greensburg tomorrow in the Corydon Central Regional. At the Forest Park Regional in 2A, Christian Academy will meet North Knox. And at Lagodi in the Single A, Rock Creek will meet Bar Reeve. And that's some of the information going on in high school sports here as the fall sports program begins to wind down. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Jared Morris of the Assembly Call, presented by Coffee Crossing. That'll be coming up in segment 2 here on the Hoosier Report on WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Welcome back. Lee Kelly subbing for Matt this morning. Matt will be back with you on Monday morning here on the Hoosier Report. When you were looking for great coffee in downtown, let's go back a minute. Now that schools are back in session, stop for coffee on your way to drop the kids off, or come stay a while once they are safely at their desk. They either way, let Coffee Crossing brighten your day. Good morning, Jared Morris.
How are you doing?
So far, so good. Jared Morris, each and every week, brought to you by Coffee Crossing. And here on Friday, a lot of things going on. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the expectations for IU and for Romeo and Juwan Morgan in particular. Is it a little scary, all of the expectations and all of the mentions, or is it perfectly okay?
Well, that's a good question. Probably a better question to ask those guys.
Probably.
I don't know if it's scary for them. But, you know, I mean, Romeo is a guy who's dealt with expectations for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm sure he's comfortable with them. And Juwan Morgan is a guy who has grown into the expectations. And so, you know, given the maturity that he's shown and how much he's embraced being a leader, and, you know, what he did last year, really emerging as a star in the Big Ten, I'm sure he's comfortable with the expectations too. And, you know, I think as a program, you know, and as fans of a program that we all hope, you know, gets back up to being, you know, an annual Big Ten contender, an annual national contender, these are the kind of expectations that we all need to get comfortable with again. You know, hopefully we put the days in our rear view where we're just hoping to be a bubble team, or we're hoping to be above 500, you know, which is, you know, where Indiana's been the last couple of years. For this program to be back where we want it to be, this needs to be an annual thing where you have guys that are, you know, ranked in the top 40, 50 among players in the country, and you're projected to be top two or three in the conference. That's what should be an annual thing. And so hopefully this is the first step toward that becoming something that we can all get used to each year.
It's been a long time since I've seen IU fans as excited as they are, and it comes in all ages. I had a lady stop me yesterday while I was out shopping, and she just can't wait. She said, we've had season tickets for 29 years, and she said, I don't remember a time when I've been more excited waiting for that first game to come about in any of those 29 years. And young kids can't wait to pick up that latest Romeo jersey or whatever it might be. It's a time that we certainly haven't seen in a while, and certainly in a long time.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of factors that are contributing to that. Romeo is obviously a big factor. You know, people are excited about a homegrown talent like him staying at home, excited to watch him play. You've got a senior in Juwan Morgan that people have been able to watch grow for 3 years, and it always seems to make seasons more exciting when they're senior-led teams and those players are really good. And then, you know, I think you've still got the freshness, the newness of the Archie Miller era, but he's been around long enough now and done enough, even though, you know, the team didn't make the NCAA tournament last year, he's done enough to prove to Indiana fans that he's earned the trust. And I think, you know, when you come in and you do what you say you're going to do and you kind of lay out a plan and you execute it step by step by step, fans see that and take notice. And it's an especially stark contrast from kind of how frenetic and how up and down things were, you know, for the previous 7-8 years. So I think you kind of add all of that up, and that's where some of the excitement comes, because it really feels like the program is right on the cusp of getting back to where Indiana fans expect their program to be. And there's always a special kind of excitement when that's still new and when it's still kind of the adventure to get there. You know, that in some ways, that's how that 2011-2012 season was, and why that season was so exciting for so many people and so much fun. And I think there are some parallels between that one and this one. Just because of that. And so I certainly feel it, and kind of like you, you know, so many different people that I talk to are feeling that excitement and just ready for this season to get started.
I know they can't wait. I want you to look into your crystal ball at the cast of 17 players on the roster. Who do you see that's going to come out that the fans really aren't looking at right now, didn't see play a whole lot maybe last season or played some, that could step up, probably will step up, and be a name that IU fans will be toasting on a regular basis?
That's a really good question. You know, I think one guy that jumps out is Race Thompson, and he's a guy who's been around the program. He was here last year as a redshirt, and he was a top 100 recruit. You know, he was and that kind of gets lost, and people forget about that. You know, but we saw what he could do at Hoosier Hysteria. And I think he's going to have the opportunity, especially if it takes Deron Davis a little while to get back. There are going to be some minutes for a guy who can go down low and mix things up and get rebounds and play tough defense. And while we haven't seen him play, based on, you know, what we saw from him in high school and the descriptions that we've heard from Archie Miller when he's talked about him, that's the kind of guy that Race is. And he's also a guy who, you know, apparently has, you know, range out to the three-point line and can face up and do some things offensively. So, you know, he's a guy that we haven't seen play a lot, but I think just based on the opportunity and the skills that he brings to the table, I would expect him to get some minutes early. And if he, you know, plays well in those minutes, I think he's a guy who can be a key rotation piece for the entire season.
I want to pick your brain a little bit about the new NBA plan for the G League, and what kind of impact it would have, and how soon would it have an impact of any kind on high school kids before they go to college?
So from what I know about that, it'll start next summer. And basically, they've created what are called select contracts, which means that elite high school players can go to the G League. They can bypass college. And right now, of course, with the so-called one-and-done rule, a guy who is in high school can't go directly to the NBA. You know, if they want to play professionally, they need to go overseas. They can still go to the G League. And so what they've done is to try and make the G League more attractive to a high school senior. They've increased the amount of money that they can pay. So now these select contracts will pay $125,000 for that first year. So, you know, take Romeo as an example. If he decided that he, you know, had wanted to bypass college and just go directly to the pros, he couldn't go to the NBA, but he could have taken this, or he could take this $125,000 a year contract, play in the G League, and then be eligible for the draft the next year. So I guess the thinking there would be, you know, you get paid, you get $125,000. You know, you get to focus on basketball full time because there aren't the rules and restrictions like you have in college on how much you can practice. You don't have to worry about school, all of that stuff. What will be interesting to see is if anybody actually takes this, because while that sounds good, I mean, it's nice to have the option of $125,000. Again, you look at it from a guy like Romeo's perspective, you know, playing for a year of college at IU, where his reputation, his name, his brand will just grow so big in that 1 year. It really is, I think, for most of these guys, is going to make more long-term sense to go to college. And plus, the experience may be more pleasant because you're on chartered flights and you're playing in front of 17,000 rabid screaming fans. You're on TV, which you don't get in the G League. And so, you know, again, good to have the option, but I think we'll have to see it play out. But from all the really informed voices that you hear on this, they really wonder how many of the elite prospects will actually consider this as a reasonable option.
Let's go back to Romeo Langford for a moment. And if Romeo would have gone to another elite school, let's say he went to Duke, would he have been receiving, in your opinion, the same accolades and mentions and on watch list with three other players right there at Duke that are all coming in as freshmen that are outstanding as well? Would he have been getting that same type of nationwide coverage, you think?
He would be getting some, but it wouldn't be the same. You know, certainly I think just because of how good he was in high school and how high profile of a recruit he is, you know, no matter where he went, he would have been on the Jerry West shooting guard watch list, and he would probably be a freshman of the year candidate in whatever conference it is. But there's something about him going to Indiana, staying in state, and what just the national brand of Indiana basketball still means, and what that story, that narrative is, that takes it to the next level. And as we go through this season, you know, because he has all of that, and because at Indiana, you know, he's not sharing the limelight with three other, you know, top five recruits like he would be at a place like Duke, it's just going to magnify it even more. Now, the pressure is certainly magnified. But as long as he can handle that, and I think we all assume that he can, you know, having the brighter spotlight, I think, will be much better for him in the long run. Yeah, because he's a guy who projects to have a 10, 12, 15-year NBA career, you know, and potentially be, you know, an all-star level player. And so, you know, to be able to do that and then to build, you know, just the, again, you know, kind of that brand that he'll have being at Indiana University, there was no place he could have gone that was going to give him that opportunity like IU will.
Do you think the recruits that are looking at Indiana for next year possibly are looking at what has happened to Romeo, the publicity, the notoriety, the love by the Indiana fans, and taking that into consideration when they're looking at which college they might want to go to, talking about Keon Brooks and others?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, you know, Keon even said, and I forget who quoted him on this, but, you know, one of the articles after his official visit, you know, talked about how he, it may have been Zach Osterman in the Indy Star, but talked about how, you know, he even talked with Romeo about staying in state and kind of what that's like. And, you know, Keon, Trace, these guys are huge recruits. You know, Romeo was kind of one of a kind. I mean, no one's going to get that level of attention. But it's the same thing. You know, Keon or Trace, they couldn't find another place where their commitment would be met with as much love and appreciation and, you know, frankly, expectation as it will be at Indiana. And so as long as those guys feel comfortable with the expectation and the spotlight, Indiana is going to be able to give them more of those opportunities and attention just because of the fact that they're in state and how much, you know, fans of Indiana, A, just love their team, but also really appreciate the high-profile in-state guys hanging around. And the other thing people are going to be watching, and, you know, Matthew Hurt, who is a top-10 recruit out of Minnesota, mentioned this. You know, he said he's really going to be watching how Romeo is used, how Archie Miller uses Romeo, how he develops him in his 1 year. Because some of these top guys, you know they're only going to be in school for 1 year, and they really want to make the most of that, and they want to maximize that time to put themselves in the best position for the draft. And so that will also be interesting to see. And I think, you know, some of the top recruits who are going to wait until the spring to make their decision, they're really going to be paying attention to that as the season goes along.
Can't let you go without talking a little bit about the trial going on now. I understand jury deliberations are expected next week. And first of all, your thoughts on everything that's come out to this point, what we know and what information is out there. Your thoughts on how this whole thing is going to go.
Well, you know, none of it's been shocking. None of it's even really been surprising because I think we all kind of assumed that this kind of stuff is what was going on. I suppose it's been a little bit surprising to actually read it and to see text messages and to see big name schools like, you know, Kansas and big names like Bill Self and Zion Williamson, you know, attached to it. That's kind of been a little bit eye-opening. But I think it's good. I think, you know, because of the rules that are in place, you know, this black market has been created where, you know, players who have real economic value are, you know, that they're eventually getting it because they're so valuable to the schools and to the shoe companies. And while that can, you know, maybe make us all feel a little bit slimy and we feel like it's wrong because it's against the rules, and I'm not a fan of breaking rules when they're in place, I'm much more a fan of changing the rules and making rules that make sense, especially in the present day atmosphere of college athletics, which with all the money and all the attention and all the resources is a lot different than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So I'm glad that this stuff is coming out. I think it's ridiculous that coaches like Coach K and Roy Williams are trying to pretend like they don't know that it's going on and that it's, quote, a blip or not what's happening. It's clearly what's happening. And what I hope happens is now it opens up a more honest dialogue where the stakeholders here can actually look at it and say, hey, this is what's going on. You know, the people who are accepting money in exchange for talents that are real and value that they're providing, they're really not doing anything wrong. It's only in this kind of warped sense of right and wrong because of NCAA rules that we look at it as wrong. Let's have a real conversation about this and figure out something that works better for everybody. You know, and that doesn't mean that you have to change everything, because there are parts of the quote-unquote amateurism model that I think do make some sense, but there are other parts of it that make no sense anymore. And so my hope is that, you know, kind of shining a bright light on this will, you know, maybe not right now, you know, maybe it'll take a little while, but lead to some real honest conversations that develop a system that works even better for everybody involved.
Does the not guilty verdict make all of this go away? The feds give up, realize they can't win, and so it's back to business as usual, as it has been the last few years, if a not guilty verdict comes in?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how much the verdict of this case is going to make a difference as much as all the information that's come out, because there are also a couple of other cases that are, you know, that are going to be happening. And then, you know, what's so warped about this case is, you know, the defense is arguing that because the case is basically that these guys were defrauding the schools because they were paying these athletes, you know, thus making them ineligible, which I think we all know is kind of ridiculous, because we know that the schools benefit from these players coming. And in a lot of cases, you know, assistant coaches or even head coaches were active in soliciting the help from the shoe companies. So it's really strange, you know, the way that the case is kind of formulated. So it will be interesting to see what happens. And I think that, you know, that will certainly, I think, impact maybe how willing, especially in the short term, you know, the shoe companies and some of the movers and the shakers are to just continue with the status quo. But I think just the information that's come out and the fact that the NCAA has now said that they will use evidence gathered in these FBI investigations and in trials as part of their enforcement, you know, means that no matter what the actual verdict of this trial is, there are now some threads that need to be pulled and that probably will be pulled at some point to kind of follow up and see what happens. So either way, regardless of the verdict, you know, that light has kind of been shown on this stuff. And now, you know, we'll see how much the NCAA decides they want to pursue it, especially when you have names like Kansas, Duke, and North Carolina and Arizona being brought into it. You know, those are some of the biggest brands in the sport. And really, that's where, you know, when you start jeopardizing those brands, now you might see, you know, those schools, now you might see some real discussion of change, because college basketball is not going to be able to function without, you know, without its top names in there. What are they going to do? So that part will be really interesting to watch play out.
Jared Morris of Assembly Call, our guest this morning. Thank you, Jared. Enjoyed talking to you. And Matt will be back on Monday. I know he'll be looking forward to talking to you next Friday.
Sounds great. My pleasure. Good talking to you, Lee.
All right. Jared Morris of Assembly Call. When you are looking for great coffee in downtown New Albany, don't forget about our sister company, 410 Bakery. Great coffee, great bread, and that is the 410 Bakery. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star going to be joining us here on WXVW and the Hoosier Report.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report. Our next guest, Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star. Good morning, Kyle.
Hey, good morning, Lee. How are you doing?
So far, so good. It is Friday, after all.
That's right.
Absolutely. Kyle, you had an interesting article, and all of your articles are interesting, but you had two that I came across in getting ready for this morning. The first one was talking about small school football, small high schools in Indiana trying to keep the tradition going. I liked the article. I came from a small high school, which is now grown a little bit, but that was an interesting article. And as you wrote the article, talked to the people and so on, how long can these schools hold on when they've got 15 kids on the entire team and other schools with similar numbers? How long can they maintain?
Well, that's the question. Is just that. And you know, wanted to go up and actually see cast and play and kind of get an idea of you know, what exactly was going on there and kind of the struggles they're having that other schools have too, because three schools this year have had to drop football, you know, because of numbers. So you know, that kind of piqued my interest and maybe, you know, a chance to put a face on it and go see them play. And they're in kind of a unique situation where, you know, they don't have any seniors this year. They had one who got hurt last week, and then, you know, they have some better numbers in the middle school classes, but, you know, a program that hasn't had a lot of success here recently. You know, so I think in their case, and they're getting beat really bad this year and having a lot of trouble, but after you go watch them play, you kind of get a better sense of you know, their perseverance and kind of being able to stick with it. You know, the question is, you know, with numbers that low, you know, at what point does safety become an issue? And you've got kids out there playing both ways, obviously, and doing everything. And, you know, if you lose a couple more to injury, you know, you're putting freshmen out there against seniors in a lot of cases, and it's not really an apples and oranges situation. And, you know, I know they had a chance this year, and some schools have done this where they'll, you know, if numbers are that low, they'll play a JV schedule and just, you know, only play against JV teams. And they can compete at that level because basically the second half of that game against Knox, it was only JV players playing against them. And you know, that's more of an apt comparison. But, you know, I know some of these schools, some of the issues they're having are issues other schools are having with just, you know, it's a combination of things. It's specialization and it's safety concerns. Obviously, that's one that people hear about a lot and talk about a lot. With concussions and safety, but I think it's something that you can't kind of turn your back on. And I know from talking to Bobby Cox at the ISSA, it's not something he at all is shying away from. It's an issues that have to be raised. And I even brought up the eight-man possibility and maybe looking at that down the road. And that's kind of a foreign concept a little bit in Indiana, but a lot of other states, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, some schools in Missouri do it. Obviously, Texas has played six-man. There's schools down there for a long time. So, maybe at some point that's something you put a study committee together. And if you want to have football, maybe that's a way to do it. And maybe it gets more schools interested in it. But I don't know if that's an imminent thing at all or even if that's something that ever comes to pass. But I know there's a lot of schools out there struggling with numbers, and I don't think it's going to it's not going to go away, I don't think. So you either have to, you have to kind of figure something out. And I know those guys up there at Kasten are doing their best. And there's a lot of pride, I know, just to be able to finish the season, even if you are 0-10 at the end of it, just to be able to field a team every week and go out there and compete is something they take pride in.
Yeah, and it's the haves and the have-nots in Indiana. I was at the old RCA Dome, and I watched Warren Central in the championship game of the state. They dressed 150 kids and probably could have dressed more. But, I mean, they coming out of the tunnel, they just kept coming and coming and coming. And it's – and then I read the article, and I've seen some stories. Trinity Lutheran, I read the article about them earlier in the year from their numbers, but – while it affects small schools a great deal, there are some schools of decent size that have small numbers of kids for whatever reason. Soccer, but, they're big schools, but not a lot of kids want to play football.
Yeah, I'm surprised sometimes when I hear the numbers at the bigger schools, even the numbers of, senior class of kids are down or, whatever class it is, and they've only got 12 or 13 kids. I mean, that's somewhat alarming too. And also, you're right, because the bigger schools, there are schools that haven't fielded a freshman team or, didn't have enough to field the JV team or, so there's little things like that kind of chip away, I guess, at the foundation that, are not, maybe not alarming is probably not the right word, but you can see cracks, I guess, starting to show somewhat even in the bigger schools. And I know the numbers, I kind of sent out a survey, an informal survey to all the ADs and coaches at the beginning of the season, just kind of asking, what are your numbers like this year? And, it wasn't anything, scientific by any means, and most of them were either, even or some were up, some were down. It wasn't anything to really raise your eyebrow at all, but there were some schools that did tell me, hey, we're not able to field the JV team or whatever. And then in the other case, I don't like Brownsburg this year. They had two freshman teams because they had so many numbers in that class. So there are positive signs as well. But I think those are the numbers. I think we'll see, the middle school numbers are I've heard anecdotally again that they're down at some of the bigger schools. Again, that's not every case, but some ADs did say, hey, you might want to keep an eye on that because I think that's where that age group is maybe where it's going to start to show a little bit more. So, it's an issue that I'm, interested in to see where it goes. And I always think there's a lot of value in playing football, but I think parents have a right to be concerned, and it's an issue that I don't think is going to go away at all.
Kyle Nedrip of the Indianapolis Star, our guest this morning. And one other article that I noticed that caught my attention, and it's something I know a little about but not a lot, and that's the inaugural IHSAA Unified Flag Football season that was just completed. And can you share with our listeners, Kyle, a little bit about what this is? And then I want you to tell a lot of the things that were in your story about the state finals.
Yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that. It's Unified Flag Football is in its first year, and they've done, IHSA has done Unified Track for I think going on 4 years now. So this is, I have never covered the Unified Track. I've always kind of wanted to go and see what it's about, and then they started football this year, and so it's kind of more on my radar even this year, and went out Saturday to cover the state finals. And so basically what it is you can have general population students on the team, and then a couple of the players on the field at all times. They play five players on each side, and a couple of them have to be mentally disabled or learning disabled students are from that school. So, you know, it's a really neat deal. It's, you know, I think the kids from the general population get a lot out of it, and obviously the kid, the handicapped kids get a ton out of it too.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's a great thing.
Final.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Noblesville had a team, Ben Davis, Tippecanoe Valley, and Bedford ended up winning it. But just a really fun event out there at the Colts practice facility, and really enjoyed, you know, covering it. I hope to do more of that, and maybe do the track one this year too, and find some good stories, because there's a lot of great people running that event with Special Olympics, and you know, that's really, when you watch that, it's really what sports is all about, to, you know, see those kids. It's all about inclusiveness and to get those kids out there, and then get the general population kids excited about it too, for those kids to be involved. I think everybody walks out of there feeling good about it.
Yeah, one of the things you had in the story, and my philosophy when I was teaching was always, you know, try to get kids involved in something. Find an area they feel comfortable in, whether it's athletics or the ROTC program or fine arts or whatever it might be. You mentioned in particular a student that the coach had said at lunchtime, he sat all by himself with his head down, didn't have anybody to eat lunch with, not a lot of friends around, and after he became a part of this unified flag football team at his school, he had people to sit with and did sit with them at lunch, and it changed his whole attitude, his whole day. I thought that was a great part of the story and a side part of being on the unified team.
Yeah, Mitch from Noblesville, he kind of walked into Michael Hash's office a few years ago before they started doing unified track, and he heard about it and, you know, kind of walked in there unannounced, basically, and said, "Hey, can we do this?" And you know, had his head down and wasn't a real outgoing kid at all. But then through all this, you know, now he's on the board of the Special Olympics. He goes out to these schools. He goes to talk to them about, you know, unified sports. He's so really, that's what, you know, building confidence through this is changes life, you know, and so that's the neat thing about it. And, you know, he was out there Saturday, you know, obviously to watch it, and was saying, you know, he wish he could have done it, but at the same time, you know, he's just as proud to see other kids being able to be a part of it, you know, partly because of what he did to get it started at Noblesville. He helps coach those kids in track and football as well. So, you know, that's just one example, and hopefully a lot of other schools. I think there's going to be a lot. I think there's 25 schools, I think, this year that were involved, and I would imagine that'll at least double next year, just because it's word of mouth, and, you know, people like Mitch will go ask and say, "Hey, can we be a part of this?" And I think it'll, I wouldn't be surprised within a couple of years if there's 100 schools that have unified flag football.
Well, Jeff Callahan, the athletic director at Bedford, will certainly be a good ambassador to help spread the word, especially after they won the state championship and so on. But Jeff will spread the word about how it's affected his school building there at Bedford, I'm sure.
Bedford had a lot of kids already, you know, a lot of kids out there watching and wearing Bedford jerseys, and a lot of kids on the sideline. And so I can't imagine people won't go to them and ask, how do we do this too? And I'm sure they'll be a big front runner as far as getting this thing going.
And for those of you, and I have never seen a unified football game, but in looking at pictures on your story, it is a situation where they do not wear football gear or helmets. It appears it would be relatively inexpensive to add the sport to your list at your school, other than the flags you may have to purchase. But it looks like something you can get into relatively inexpensively and get as many kids involved as you would like.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, all you really need are flags, and you know, the kids are wearing what looked to me like to be the old jerseys from the teams that had, you know, the tackle football teams. So I'd imagine you just have to pay the referees and, you know, somebody to run the scoreboard, and that'd be about it, I would think. No shoulder pads or anything like that. It's just you kind of go out there and play, and it's, you know, it's an exciting game. You know, flag football is kind of an up and down type of game anyway, so there's a lot of long passes, and a lot of big scoring plays. And like I said, I was impressed with how athletic those kids were. There's a lot of speed on the Bedford team, and I thought Ben Davis and Noblesville and Tippecanoe New Valley all had really good players.
All right, Kyle Nedenriff of the Indianapolis Star with us here on a Friday edition of the Hoosier Report. Kyle, as we start the football sectional here across the state tonight, who are the teams in and around Indy that have stood out this season? And I looked at the five players that to watch for tonight as well. So tell us about the teams and the players that have had outstanding seasons up your way.
Yeah, it's well, we kind of broke down the 5A on down to 1A because those are the ones that get started tonight, and then 6A will do more about next week, kind of as we get into the into the 6A tournament. But really, New Powell is the most dominant team we've seen this year as far as anything locally, probably even statewide, the way they put it on. And this is their sixth year in a row with the undefeated record in the regular season. This might be their best team they have had. Of course, they're playing up in 5A because success factors. So they're actually a 4A team playing 5A. But, they've been the best team. They don't have an easy draw, though. They'll play Zionsville next week, most likely. Zionsville plays Muncie Central tonight. And if Zionsville wins, that would set up a big game between those two next week. I think that'll be a really good game. Zionsville plays mostly 6A programs all year, but tonight, Pendleton Heights at Marion is a game that's definitely interesting in 4A. Marion's 9-0, but Pendleton Heights plays a better schedule than they do, and they're 7-2. Pendleton Heights is a team that played New Powell, probably their toughest game this year. Beach Grove, Mooresville tonight. Mooresville's in 4A. That's a complete turnaround of a program under Mike Gillen. They're 8-1 this year. Last year at this time, they were 1-8. So it's fun to see programs like that get turned around. And they have a really good player in John Eineman at receiver, who's getting some Division I interest as a receiver. So those are a few. They're Cathedral plays tonight. They're in 5A, of course. They play Plainfield. I would imagine they'll probably win that game. So a lot of, Triton Central gets started tonight, Cecina in 2A. There's a big 1A game, Traders Point at Covenant Christian, two programs that are relatively new. So those are kind of the bigger games tonight that are getting underway. And then, of course, next week there'll be a ton of really good games next week as these 5A on down gets into the semifinals and then 6A gets started as well. So next week should be, there's a handful of good games tonight, and then next week will be even better.
If you were a gambling man, are there teams in and around Indianapolis that you would be willing to bet would be playing in Lucas Oil on Thanksgiving weekend? Anybody that really it would be a major upset if they weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Warren Central's just pretty dominant beyond what we thought they would be in 6A. And if they're not there on the day after Thanksgiving, I would really be surprised. And their route to get there is not easy. I mean, they've got to beat, of course, Ben Davis in the first round, which Ben Davis not as good as they were last year when they won state. But they always have talent, and then they would have to probably get through Center Grove or, one of Brownsburg or Avon somewhere along the way. But even against those teams, it'd be hard to see any of those teams upsetting them. Maybe Center Grove because the way they can run the ball. Maybe Brownsburg or Avon because they are having really good seasons and have a lot of good senior players. But, again, I would be surprised at that. And then in 3A is a really interesting class to me this year with, Chittard is probably one of their best teams they've had in a long time. But you look down in the southern part of the state, in Evansville Memorial, they won state last year and they have so many guys back and had a chance to see that team play last year. Michael Lindauer, their quarterback, is one of the best in the state. So that could be a really fun semi-state game. So I think the winner of that game, if that comes to be, you'd have to probably pick them to win state too. But, New Powell, I think, is a favorite, but, they'll have to beat Zionsville and get through one of Cathedral or Decatur Central at some point. So I don't know if you can say they're just a total favorite, even the way they've beaten teams this year. But I would say Warren Central, of any of the teams, you'd have to say they're probably the biggest favorite of all.
All right. Kyle Nedrip of the Indianapolis Star. Kyle, always a joy to talk to you, and always enjoy reading your articles in the Indy Star. Thank you for joining us this morning.
You bet, Lee. Thanks a lot.
All right, that's going to wrap up this segment. We'll be back, wrap it up for a Friday here on the Hoosier Report on WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison. Matt, back with you on Monday. A reminder that you can catch the IU-Penn State football game tomorrow, 3:30, right here on WXVW. Don Fisher will have all the action for you. And again, that's 3:30 tomorrow, IU-Penn State. Tonight's featured high school football game on the Big X, Columbus East of New Albany in the opening round of the sectional. And that'll be getting underway at 7 o'clock tonight. Other football action this evening, we've got, in addition to Columbus East at New Albany, Switzerland Counties at Providence, Charlestown at Salem, Silver Creek at Scottsburg, Mitchell plays at Clarksville, and Eastern Green at Rock Creek. Those are the football games on tap this evening as the sectionals get underway around the state. Volleyball action tomorrow in the regional. Local teams involved. You have Providence playing. It'll be at Bloomington. They'll meet Center Grove. That's a 10 a.m. game. Class 3A, we've got Silver Creek. They'll be playing at Corydon. They'll take on Greensburg. In 2A, Christian Academy meets North Knox. That's a 10:30 start time, and that'll be at Forest Park. And in Class A, Lagodi is the site of the regional, and Rock Creek will meet Bar Reeve. So that's what's going on. Good luck to all of the local teams, cross country, volleyball, soccer, and football as they get into tournament play. Again, a reminder, IU-Penn State tomorrow, 3:30 here on the Big X, and tonight, Columbus East New Albany High School football, 7 p.m. I'd like to thank Matt Dennison and everyone for allowing me to set in this morning on the Hoosier Report on Big X Radio.